Hello and welcome back to Anon Influence, brought to you by The Salt, the first to market nano influencer channel in South Africa and part of SA's number one influence marketing group, Infinity. I'm Andolan Sheikh, and as usual, we have some great guests on the show today. This is part two of my conversation with Dr. Doug Mateus and Gordon Miller, aka the Doc and the Guru. So if you haven't listened to part one yet, I encourage you to do so. Today's episode is again filled with interesting insights. We look at the accessibility to smartphones with great cameras and internet connectivity as only one of the reasons for the growth in influencer marketing, the lessons all of us marketers can learn from the Kardashians, the shift to purpose-led and inclusivity in brand campaigns, and the Doc and the Guru's prediction for future of marketing. Enjoy. If you enjoy listening to Anon Influence and find it insightful or helpful or educational, you will also enjoy our fortnightly newsletter. Sign up at the link in our show notes.
This podcast series has been made possible through an exclusive sponsorship from SA's number one nano influencer platform, The Salt. Most brands have a communication line to their existing customers, but not a way to get them to have additional positive brand conversations. The Salt solves the problem by identifying brand fans and getting them to talk more about their positive brand experiences. The Salt have a database of over 140,000 registered brand fans and in-depth information on each to perfectly match your brand to the right influencers. Reach out to them now and see what they can do for you.
Over the last couple of years, influence marketing obviously has grown quite quickly, especially in South Africa. I think over the last 5-6 years, it's just skyrocketed. And I was wondering if you have an opinion on what was that game changer that kind of led to marketers taking it a little bit more seriously than what they had before and now seeing it as a legitimate marketing channel. Gordon, let's start with you.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I've alluded to the mobile device obviously, you know, becomes influencing, becomes an out-of-the-home kind of experience as well. It was previously an in-home or media consumption experience. Now it's an out-of-home. So I can be influenced at a point of decision making rather than kind of a priori, which I think is a major point of difference. And, you know, I just also think it's quantum at the end of the day. You know, there's massive quantum behind the scene, but there's also focus. And at the end of the day, you want to be influenced by somebody. And we've seen a lot of this as a meme coming through our podcast in the last 2 years, Doc. Trust. And during COVID, trust has become a major issue. So you're looking for trusted people. So it doesn't have to be a superstar. That's impressive. And if I could grow a beard like George Clooney, you know, Olivia, you know, I could do something, but I can't. So I need to lower my sights a bit and find somebody who can influence me. So I think it's a realization that it's mobile. It can happen anywhere, anytime. Is something, and I think it also was kind of around the growth of understanding in media of the POE model, paid, owned, earned. And if you start looking at the value of earned communication, earned influence, which you don't necessarily have to pay for, then I think it was really became apparent that to spend $1 million is one thing, to spend $1 million and get $2 million worth of exposure is good. To spend $1 million and get $2 million of discounted exposure plus another two because your message has been amplified by influencers, that's the game changer. So it's an amplification of successful campaigns from trusted people that makes all the difference, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, Gordon. And I think I go along with you. You know, it's the brand in your hand type thing, you know, with the device, the mobile device, data prices coming down, price of smartphones coming down. Everybody is now taking photographs. I mean, you look back 10, 20 years ago, you'd have to have a camera and a you know, it's just, you know, the research bears it out. I mean, but I mean, we're a sample of 2 years, Gordon. I mean, I very rarely walked around with a camera 20 years ago. Obviously, you've gone holiday, but I'm talking about everyday stuff, you know. So whether you're taking a photograph of your meal and posting that on social. So it's the data come down, the phones, the camera phones, and then also the social media and the ability to dialogue two ways, you know. So once you stick something out, it's like table tennis, I guess. You've got to expect the ball to come back. So when you put something out, much like, you know, you do with your podcast and we do, you know, you hope to get dialogue and that you can at least prolong that discussion, that it's not just 30 minutes or an hour, whatever the case may be. And the same then, you know, and I mean, Gordon, we've had on our show people where people have started to put different lenses onto things. So for argument's sake, let's take, you know, if you cast your mind back to the Sharks stadium and what they've done. So you, 10 years ago, if you go to the Sharks rugby stadium, the primary product is a rugby game. You may have a curtain raiser, but you're going to go there for the main game. They're 80 minutes and the guys play and win, lose, or draw. That's kind of what happens. But what they've realized is that people are influenced differently. So little kids, littlies, want to come there and they want to swim. So there's a little swimming pool now at the ground. Maybe bigger kids are gaming. You can't swim against this gaming tide now wish it wasn't so, Gordon. You know what I mean? True. So there's a gaming environment. And then there's a family stand. And so what I'm saying is the stadium itself and the thinking behind it has influenced or try to at least accommodate difference of behavior these days. And we can chat about that so that people come there for different reasons. And I think that's part of it. You know, it's understanding the current dynamics of where you are, not getting caught up in 10 years ago and wishing it wasn't so. You know, I've also seen and spoken with people where you hear that people wish it was different. And I think the social media thing, you know, has changed the game for me completely because of the two-way dialogue and the real-time dialogue.
I mean, but also, you know, I think beyond marketing, there are realities that we've become aware of. I mean, the power of consumer journalism. I mean, if you look at some of the greatest stories broken around the world now, it's because of consumer journalism. Ask Boris Johnson how he feels about consumer journalism. The picture of him having a glass of wine with his mates is backfired. But so I think we've recognized from journalism perspective that the power of that, you know, can be communicated to marketing as well.
I think also a big part of it is that, to your point, that people have become aware of certain things and we've become a bit skeptical of brands telling us how amazing they are. But if someone else advocates for it who we trust, we're going to give them a go. And then secondly, influencers also potentially put a personality and a face to a brand. So there is that accessibility, that two-way dialogue. We're not being spoken at, but we are having a conversation at the end of the day. In the last couple of years, 2-3 years, is there any influencer campaigns that stand out for you that really caught your eye and why?
I think, you know, again, I don't think there's one or two that have stood out, but I think I go along with what Gordon says. You know, when you look at, and I look at the authenticity of the person, or I try to judge the authenticity of the person. So for argument's sake, let me give you campaigns that I don't like in my consideration set for me. But I mean, lots of people do love them. As the rise and continued rise of the Kardashians, as an example. You know, when I can't win that battle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I want to almost go back to the creator, Ryan Seacrest. Not seafood. You called him Ryan Seacrest.
Did I?
Yeah. A while ago.
Freudian slip.
Jeremy was there. Jeremy Meg. He said Freudian slip. But the point is, Ryan Seacrest. He's actually Ryan Seafood. So I want to go back to Ryan Seafood and say, but hold on a second. You created this monster with all its spin-offs and all, but no one cares what I want. And that's, I think, the lesson for marketers, Gordon. The world doesn't spin around your axis, what you want. So as much as I don't like those, and you know, whether it's Kendall doing makeup or Kylie, whichever one's doing makeup, or whatever the case may be, who cares what I want? And so you've got to embrace that and at least look at where the world is in terms of an influencer campaign. And I mean, so for me, I'm not that impressed with that. But again, you know, I think the important thing is to check your ego and to understand what the world wants at the moment. And then I think, you know, just looking at the good side of it, you know, I look at, and we've spoken at length about purpose, as most people have, and really, what is purpose? Is it something you're just jumping on? Is it real purpose? Are you really doing it? All of those things, okay? So if I look at some of the work that, again, would resonate with me, may not resonate with the next person, I'm quite encouraged by some of the work where brands are speaking up. You know, you look at Adidas lately, a few years back, they partnered with a company called Poly, ocean plastic. Okay, so then at the Australian Open 2 years ago, all the Adidas sponsored athletes at the Tennis Open played in recycled kit. In other words, their clothing was recycled. They've got Run for the Oceans. They've got a lot of stuff now where you can at least see what they're doing. You know, a few years back, I think it was Supersport actually, where they recycled material and the plastic and made it into cricket stumps and bats for bat and ball on the beach. You know what I mean? So those are the give back programs where I can see a brand doing something good for society. And I think that to me is far more impressive than, you know, somebody necessarily just punting a product. But, you know, as a marketer, I've done it as well. You know, we live in a world of consumerism. You know, my job, kid yourself not, you know, was to dolly something up and sell it. Who am I now to criticize the next person because they've used an avenue that just today is called influencer marketing?
For me, I think, you know, trying to analyze the answer to your question and is look at who's changed my behavior. Sometimes if I take my view of women in advertising and the role that they play, it's been my colleagues who have gone into leadership positions. People like Yvonne Johnson don't always like the things she say, but I've taken them to heart and I understand and they've changed my behavior. So there are those influencers who are close to me because I know their pedigree, I know their insights, and I trust their intellect and integrity. But then there are the bigger guys. You know, I always get mixed up between, you know, who's the gorilla lover, David Attenborough or Richard? It's Sir David, isn't it? So, you know, I'm now at the point where I would pay a premium to buy a product that isn't in a plastic bag because of that influence from the BBC. But David Attenborough, I think, is really for me, is it David or which one?
Yeah.
His brother is the, it doesn't matter. We all know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, the Tarzan guy. So he's changed my view. I mean, I'm desperate now to buy stuff that isn't in plastic packaging. So that's influencer for me. I like we had it on the show. We talked about it. I genuinely would pay a premium for something that wasn't in a plastic package. And that's a game changer.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Gordon, I look at absolutely, and I think, you know, it's all of those, and it's those where you, I guess, where you are in your life, you know.
Absolutely. 18,
I suppose you have a very different view to when you're 40. But the point of the story is, if I look at just change behavior and I look at recycling and I look at and I don't need somebody to walk around with a placard saying save the earth. I just need to look at the facts and I need to maybe be influenced by certain people. But if I look at our behavior as a household, as a family, over the last X years, it's changed significantly in terms of that one dynamic, in terms of plastic and awareness of recycling and awareness of all of that. Now, I don't know where it all, so I don't know where, but it's a drip strategy. You know, sometimes in marketing, it's not just the big bang, the big launch. It's that drip, drip, drip. And you just hope that over a period of time of drips, you get a half a bucket of water. Yeah. And so maybe that's the thing, you know. So wherever those drips came from, I look at, you know, and again, you look at Checkers and you offshore, so you wouldn't have seen their latest campaign. But the point is, they, I don't know if you've seen it, Gordon, their ad now with the polar bear in the store and the orangutan and that. Because what they've done is also, you know, spoken about, and it's a cute ad, and so it draws you in. There's a kid, there's an animal, so you're already in the right direction. But the message is an important one, and that is about using the or buying the range of, you know, ethically sourced, responsibly done products, and that's where it's, you know, so those are the sort of things. But again, I stress the point, I think it's where you are, and that's the thing with consumer segmentation and the consumer behavior and understanding your consumer. You know, to take the big paintbrush out, it's very, very dangerous. You know, sometimes you need the fine brush so that you can paint your, back to your earlier analogy of color, stay within the line, understand at least your segment. You're not going to appeal to everyone with every message. We know that to be the case.
Sticking with your art analogy, though, I mean, I think, you know, if I look at a piece of art or listen to a piece of music, I've just finished reading Elton John's autobiography called Me. And if I look at a book like that, what I'm looking for is the integrity of the artist. You can spot a piece of artwork which is technically sound, but integrity is lacking. You just can't bond with it. I enjoyed Elton John's book because it was about him. So, that's crucial for me in any successful entrepreneur, I mean, in influencer campaign. So, you know, why do I listen to Yvonne Johnson? Because I know she's walked the walk, and her opinion is of value to me. Mm. She's not talking about stuff she doesn't know. So, you know, what's the flip side of that? I mean, Rassie Erasmus, we all love Rassie. We love the fact that he's wound up the entire rugby world. But when Rassie starts trying to get me to buy Bitcoin, I'm just like, who do you think you're influencing? Yeah. Seriously, stick to what you know. So that's the key to it for me. Any campaigns that, you know, are linked to the integrity of that individual and the product usage under that circumstance work for me. LeBron James just converted to Mountain Dew Rise after 17 years of endorsing Coca-Cola. Now he's discovered that his entire career would have been enhanced had he been drinking Mountain Dew Rise. It's bollocks, okay? I mean, I can't imagine anybody, unless you didn't know, and if you're under the age of 17 and you didn't know that LeBron James, you know, endorsed Coke for 17 years, maybe you were going to have a Mountain Dew Rise. But, yeah, I just think that's shallow. So that's the one for me where Pepsi did drop the ball. But, you know, there we go.
And I think, Gordon, your point is, you know, also talking about, I guess for me, wider societal topics. You know, if you look at, let's take an example, you look at the USA soccer team women, they now at the next World Cup are going to get paid the same as the men. And that's been a case that's been lobbied for years and years and years. So even if you're not a fan of soccer or you're not a huge, outly spoken about gender rights and equal, if you look at the case and you look at some of the main players, Megan Rapinoe, as leading the forefront of societal change. You know, if I look at, I don't know if you saw the cover of the American Sports Illustrated now, has got Elon Musk's mother on it, May Musk. You know, and there again, it's breaking ages. And now Sports Illustrated for many years has been criticized because it's stick thin girls and there's a view of beauty. You know, you look back years ago to Dove with their very first thing called Dove Beauty Sketches, you know, where the sketch artist would sketch the lady who described herself and then somebody else described her. And in all or more, most cases, the other person described her more accurately and more beautifully because it's a self-esteem. So there's a lot of those pieces of work that are being done. Antibody shaming, you know, acceptance across the board, etc. So if you look at all of those, and it's not just an individual, but sometimes an event or an organization that speaks up against something. You know, you look at just in that beauty space, Victoria, and the only reason why these are topical in case you think I'm going to be using some of those products, Gordon. And what I'm saying about influencer marketing, I don't think it's just about influencing somebody to purchase. So I'm not buying those products, certainly not for myself. Maybe it's what it does is it just alerts you to something, an issue that maybe you weren't aware of. Now, Victoria's Secret is on my consideration set, but I was busy putting together some slides the other day for a presentation that I'm doing. And so I was looking particularly at sexism in advertising. I was looking at gender roles, gender stereotypes, all this. I mean, one of the classic examples, a great ad, the global Heineken ad with the men. It's called Men Drink Cocktails Too. Yeah. So there's a flip. You know, most people would look at it and probably say, hey, women drink beer. But the ad's not called that. Mm. It's not called Women Drink Beer. It's called Men Drink Cocktails Too. Mm. And that's an example. So when I look at these pieces of work, I pull them all together and they influence me to at least think differently about something.
Hashtag no filter. That's how this podcast is delivering real down-to-earth stories told by real people. For an influencer campaign that takes brand conversation to everyday real-life situations, go check out thesalt.co.za. They are the undisputed experts in real influencer marketing.
Absolutely. And I go back to what you said earlier about this drips and different messaging and different where you get it. When I was younger, the big thing was the ozone layer. And everyone was talking about ozone, and that you were getting sick of it. And now I don't even talk about it anymore because miraculously everyone kind of changed their behavior over a long period of time. And hopefully that's what we're going to do with other environmental issues as well and changing behavior for good. But I think it all comes back to that behavioral science where we're not just punting products. We're punting
a lifestyle, we're punting a reputation, we're punting a different way of looking at brands as well. And to your point, Victoria's Secret is busy undergoing a whole refresh of how people see them and perception by literally having a big inclusivity drive at the moment, because they've always been seen as this heavy sexist brand who only looks at 6 foot tall, beautiful women. I mean, I could never look like that. So it doesn't resonate with me. So people like me who's ordinary, I wouldn't go buy their lingerie. It will be my boyfriend who buys it, who goes like, oh, wow, look at these beautiful women. So I think there's a huge shift in the world at the moment, just that's purpose-led and behavioral-led instead of just buy my things because it's pretty.
Mm-hmm. I think sometimes, you know, in taking that decision, you've got to be, and I want to use the word bold, and a lot of it's a bit cliched, you know, everyone's bold in advertising, bold in marketing. But I mean, if I just look at some of the work from Nike on the last few years where they started using a woman breastfeeding as a lead image in their campaign, you know, plus size models as lead images in their campaign for an athletic brand that traditionally has been performance-based. Now, we know that a lot, if not the majority, of people who buy products are not superstar athletes. Mm. You know, they just average Joe like us. You know, we'd go in and go to whatever shop and we'd buy a sweatshirt or a t-shirt or whatever the case may be. And we don't all look like their top athlete. So that's quite interesting how they've used that. They've used the woman's body as an example of showing, you know, they've used women doing sport like boxing and profiled that. You know what I mean? They've used people of a Muslim faith, you know, with Muslim outfit, with a Nike logo as an example. You know, so it's really what it is. It's an all-inclusive ad saying all comers are welcome. You know, come in and buy Nike, use Nike, do whatever the case may be. And I think that's important. But at the time, you know, you look back and you say, what a great campaign. Everyone says I would have done it too because it was successful if you look at the share price and you look at the sales. But at the time, you know, I'd be very curious, Gordon, to have been in that boardroom when you present the work that is very, very different to the work that you, and a lot of people are veterans of Nike, so they would have seen the work for so many, and now you bring something that's so jarring, so different, and they bought into it. So yeah, you know, and I mean, I don't want to single out just Nike. There are lots of other companies doing it. I mean, I'll give you an example. Years ago, Puma, the other athletics brand, did a campaign called the After Hours Athlete. And it was about people playing pool in the bar, darts in the bar, the guys drinking in the bar, and then walking home in the Puma sneakers or a Zip-through tracksuit top. And they tapped into the insight that a lot of people who buy Puma are not athletes. They're After Hours Athletes. And again, does that influence you to say, oh, it's okay for me to buy a tracksuit because I'm that guy, I resonate and I identify. And that wasn't called an influencer, probably a traditional campaign. I'm going back about a decade or so now. But the point is, I'm just looking at things. As I said, my definition isn't just a narrow one. It's a wide one of changing consumer behavior through some sort of influence. And certainly they allowed the average Joe to buy their kit. In fact, they encouraged the average Joe to buy their kit.
Yeah, yeah.
So, gents, what do you think influencer marketing has in store for us over the next 5 years? And I know that's like an infinite amount of time when it comes to anything digital. But what's those main things you think is going to change or evolve? What's the next step that we're going to see?
I think you're going to see a lot of it played out in terms of the media platform that each influencer represents. So one of the biggest phenomenon, and I'm not talking influencer now specifically, but one of the biggest media phenomenons right now is platforms like Amazon are becoming massive advertising platforms in and of themselves, right? Of their own right. So retailers like Amazon are becoming, you know, advertising platforms, and they're making revenue out of their platforms. And I think we're going to see the same sort of thing happening with influencers now, which is monetization of your platform. So influencers obviously want to monetize for their own personal gain, but somewhere along the line, I think, you know, looking at those influencers actually selling, you know, the stuff that they are influencing, it has to be done with credibility. It has to be achievable. I have to be buying stuff from people that I actually believe in. But I do think it's going to shift in that, you know, you're going to go beyond just the messaging of endorsement, of influence, to the, okay, if you were influenced by my decision, then here it is. This is what you should do. And it's our special this week. It'll be personally endorsed by me, personally signed by me if necessary, whatever the case may be. So I think we're going to see that recognition that influencers go beyond controlling the narrative to actually becoming part of the sales drive and building on the narrative.
Agree. Yeah. And you, Doc, what do you think?
I think from my side, you know, I guess as if I just look at our local market, and I spoke earlier about data prices, and I spoke about smartphones. I think as those, and there's continual pressure on the mobile networks as well as, you know, the handset manufacturers to bring those down. So as that rises, I think you'll find one more influencers, so more people having a voice. Gordon's point of, you know, consumer journalism. I made the point of everyone with a phone, a camera at least has a view. So I think it'll increase, but I think, and I'm hoping that people would look at the authenticity and question that. You know, my point of, I look at the messenger and do I buy the messenger before the message? I think for me would be an encouraging sign so that you weed it out. The problem though is it's so difficult because one is what is good for one is not good for the other, and there is no one size fits all. So yeah, I think the easier answer, I think, will be a growth in influencers across the platform. And I think the more difficult answer is to try and find your level of authenticity, whatever that may be.
I agree with that. Yeah. And that actually brings us to the end of our conversation, James. And I've had so much fun. But my last question to you is, what do you think is the benefits of actually including influencer marketing into your 360 marketing plans for the next year, say, for marketers?
It's balance for me. You know, if we come back to the POE model, paid, owned, earned, you know, there are a lot of people who spend a lot of money. And we in a recent podcast talk, we spoke to somebody about analyzing the data and analyzing the earned, you know, social media narrative, which is important and it has to be done. But so much more, you know, important is your response to that analysis. And I think that's got to be it. You've got to integrate it into the total offering. So you do not necessarily always find yourself responding to the social media narrative, but actually controlling the narrative against your set brand objectives. So if it's health, if it's wellness, if it's gender, non-biased gender behavior, whatever it is your focal point, you need to build it into your total offering. And to a degree, for me, it's kind of like where sponsorship came in the early days. In the early days, for me, sponsorship was the brand in action. Mm. This is what, you know, we claim to do. Look at us. We sponsored there. You see it played out at ground level. So in many respects, for me, social influencers are the brand in action on a personal level, right down to the nano and micro influencers.
Yeah, and Gordon, I agree with you. And I think, you know, The up and the downside of linking a brand, and again, you know, I've had the benefit of working with, they probably weren't even called influencers, as called sportsmen or endorsers, endorsements, ambassadors, brand ambassadors, whatever. The fact of the matter is they were paid to do a job for us, but they were so linked, good or bad behavior, to our brand. Now, you know, you've got to be so careful because a lot of the times you embracing people, well, the people are living their own lives. You know, you can't control their behavior every day. Sure, they sign a piece of paper and it says, I'll do this, I won't do that, I won't do this, I will do that. But, you know, you can't monitor it. And I've had a number of calls where, you know, people would stray off and not, and it has an impact on the brand because invariably they'd be either so linked to the brand through association or physically linked to the brand. In other words, what I'm saying is they'd be driving a car with your name on, wearing an item of clothing, representing the brand. And so you've got to also manage that. I've also had the good experience of, you know, using some local people who we'd call influencers today, where, I mean, one lady was about to go to a gala event talking on our behalf. And she phoned me up and asked if I would mind if she wore a yellow dress. knowing that yellow is the color of one of our major competitors. So having that sense is fantastic. You know what I mean? So I'm absolutely wear it. But it was encouraging, Gordon, because that's a very rare example of somebody having that awareness, saying, hold on a second. I know that they've put so much of their money into their brand recognition. Are you okay with this? And it was quite a high-profile event. But I think, just going along with what Gordon's saying is where I think it is, it's going to be part of it, but it's to bring it through. And I made the point earlier of the difficulty sometimes that I'd experienced of bringing different people in with egos into one room for one common goal, where a lot of the time each person would want to make sure their patch was the best it can be. Now, if you're going to bring influencers, they must straddle across that, and sometimes people are unaware because your brand's not that special, whether this is an ad, whether it's genuine, whether whatever. And so I need that person to speak, but understand the whole dynamic here. And in many cases, if I look at the old school PR that is now morphed into digital and social speaking, it was the Cinderella, Gordon. They would often come in last after the Glory Boys, which was the creator. And then I'd spend quite a lot of time with media because they were costly. So I'd want to know how the money was being shown. But I mean, they had put this idea into the media. Which media? You know what I mean? And then somewhere, hey, by the way, has somebody written a few stories? And today it's evolved on that. But I mean, the point I'm making is I'd like it all to come together a lot sooner. And your point, Gordon, to be integrated up front, that it's not an afterthought.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that is brilliant. And that's my hope as well, that everyone is on the same team. Everyone gets briefed in from day dot. Everyone's sitting in those rooms together. Because also in influencer marketing, sometimes the big ideas have been discussed, the creative is there, and then they go, oh, by the way, we need an influencer marketing campaign next week. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh, so did you consider X, Y, and Z? And it's like, no, but can you just retrofit it? Yeah. Can you just make it work? And I think that integration is absolutely key.
It's a final comment on that as well. On the integration part there, we talk about big data as if it's a big solid chunk of something. Big data is actually just lots and lots of little bits of data. And I think that's what one has to do, that your influencer campaign is, in a sense, the end campaign is like big data. Mm. But the component elements of your influencer campaign are lots and lots of little bits. So you've got to look, yes, at each individual little bit should be aligned, but then you have to look at the aggregation, and you can't control each influencer too tightly because you will lose the spontaneity. But you can at least have them aligned in flying in the same direction so that, the end objective collectively, the big data, the big influencer data is aligned to your objective.
Absolutely. James, thank you so much for the chat. And hopefully we'll chat again soon. I certainly have learned a lot today and had a lot of fun. So catch you on the flip side.
Yep, thank you. And to all the listeners out there, thanks for the time. And let's just keep talking.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Gordon. Absolutely. Thanks, Anne. Always a pleasure. And we'll catch up later. Take care.
Absolutely. Ciao. Thanks, James.
This podcast series has been made possible by The Salt, the influencer company that turns influence into affluence. In the same way that information is presented in this podcast in a relatable and authentic way, The Salt gets your customers to tell their real brand stories to their community. Go to thesalt.co.za to learn more about how The Salt can help you grow your business.